Welcome to this RCGP podcast on the flu vaccine. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP in London and e-learning fellow for the RCGP. Today, I'll be talking to Dr. Wei Huang, who is a specialist in public health, currently working as a research fellow in flu at the RCGP Research and Surveillance Centre and the University of Oxford. Thank you for joining us today, Wei.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with your listeners.
So flu vaccine has changed in the last couple of years with the inclusion of the group of healthy people aged 50 to 64, bringing the age of universal flu vaccination down from 65. At the time of the recording, we don't know whether this will continue for next year, but I'd be interested to hear your take on the reasons for this change.
Yes, I think this important change in the influenza vaccine schedule over the last few years was really based on important side effect of the COVID pandemic. This was in order to reduce the burden of disease on the NHS at the time when this group was being heavily impacted by the pandemic. I mean, modelling data had suggested that if 50% of this group was covered by influenza vaccine, with assuming an effectiveness of 70%, there would be a reduction in 600,000 possible influenza infections and 6,000 hospital admissions, as well as the prevention of 700 to 800 influenza-related deaths. This is no small amount of reduction in burden, given the extra workload that had been created by the pandemic. Although it must be added that we do know that influenza vaccine is less effective in this group of healthy individuals between the ages of 50 and 64.
It's certainly an outcome worth striving for if we can prevent that many hospitalizations and deaths. So you said this was assuming 50% uptake. Are we anywhere near to that crucial 50% figure?
We probably are. I mean, the latest stats from UKHSA suggested as of November 2021, we were up to 40% of coverage in that group. And this is an important finding because actually in the year before, we had much less coverage. And that was the first year that this new vaccine schedule had been rolled out. We'd only actually achieved 8% coverage in that season. And so this is almost a fourfold increase in coverage in only 2 years, which would suggest that this group was very receptive to vaccination and influenza vaccination in particular. I think we are at that 50% target. However, you know, we still need to look at the effectiveness of the flu vaccine in this group, and that needs further work.
Yes, absolutely. That is quite an impressive increase in uptake just in 1 year. So I know that we work out the strain of the flu vaccination from the strain of flu that has circulated in the previous year, and that we use data from Australia, who, of course, have their flu season 6 months before we have ours. And clearly that's caused problems because there's been much less flu in the Southern Hemisphere, as in everywhere, because of the COVID-19 restrictions. Are you aware of any patterns in flu strains which might affect vaccine effectiveness?
I mean, yeah, this is a really important question. I think that, you know, for many of your listeners who may not know, the flu vaccine has to be ordered quite a way in advance. It's unlike the COVID vaccine, where we can actually tweak the vaccine to the strains that are circulating and actually produce them in fairly quick time. With influenza vaccine, a decision about what vaccine to make and what vaccines to order has to be done well in advance. And that decision is based on two main factors, really. One is the expected burden of disease. And hereby, I'm talking about both influenza and other respiratory viruses, including COVID, you know, if it's circulating. As well as the sort of expected vaccine effectiveness. So these factors have to be really taken into account in making these decisions, which need to be made quite a way in advance. And lately, as you pointed out, we've seen much less flu, but also much different sort of circulating patterns of flu. So we've seen more flu B than flu A. The vaccines that we produce are less effective overall against flu B. But realistically, I don't know if we've got enough of information at the moment to make a decision about, you know, whether we continue the vaccinations in those aged 50 to 64. As I say, we've rolled it out in the last 2 years based on this assumption of trying to reduce the burden on our health services. But we still need to do a lot of work in actually finding out if it's effective in this age group.
Absolutely. And as you say, we can't really gather that data unless we keep vaccinating them for a bit. Are there any other groups that are under consideration?
I think this is an important point. And I think this is a decision that the JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccines and Immunisations, has really been mulling over. They've considered the evidence for extending the vaccines, the influenza vaccine schedules, to different groups. And I think that there is very, very good evidence of extending the vaccines to children of school age. And that was initially recommended in 2012 and has been slowly rolled out in increasing age groups in children of school age. And so we're at the moment now reaching children of ages 11 to 12. We've got about 60% coverage in those groups, and we know it's effective in those groups. And so, you know, the question now is can we push to roll out the influenza vaccine in those aged 12 to 16? Probably with, you know, also the concurrent rollout of the COVID vaccine in those groups. As we know that flu vaccine is probably effective in those groups, and if we can then roll it out in those groups at the same time, you know, we might be able to achieve good coverage. However, there are issues probably with vaccinating that group, and that's mainly around getting consent probably from the parent and from the child in those older school age groups. And there's also other things that might impact vaccination in those school groups, especially with schools having so many other things on their plate at the moment. It might be a bit more tricky to roll out two programs in those school age groups. However, you know, if the JCVI do opt to roll it out in the 50s to 64s, we know that they've been receptive to influenza vaccination. And we know that, you know, we can probably get the coverage that we need. Before, you know, there was the sort of reluctance to roll it out in this group because we didn't know how much we could cover this group. I mean, many of them are the working age population. So, you know, actually being able to identify them and then get them to come in to take their vaccines. It was assumed before that would be difficult, but, you know, over these last 2 years, we found out that we can actually cover a good proportion of this group. And so, you know, those are the discussions that have been going on at the JCVI over the last couple of years about whether to extend it in certainly those two groups. But I think there's one last group that, you know, we shouldn't forget, and that's a new group, I think, that they would need to consider this year. That's this large group that potentially got long COVID. Given the sort of number of people that have had COVID in the last three waves, there might be potentially a large group of people who have long COVID who may be susceptible or maybe more susceptible to influenza. And so, you know, there isn't at the moment that I can see a strategy for vaccinating that group with influenza vaccine. And thus, if, you know, the JCVI decides that those groups need influenza vaccine, then we need to put in the orders and make sure that we've got enough doses to cover that group. And I think GPs will be crucial in identifying this group of long COVID if they do require vaccination, and they will be crucial also in the implementation of any changes in the influenza vaccine schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. This group of patients with long COVID is something obviously that we haven't seen before, and we need to make sure that we know who they are and that they're properly coded in the notes so that we can plan things for them. So I almost dare not say that maybe this pandemic one will at some point become a thing of the past, but how will these considerations change once the COVID pandemic is presumably at some point over?
Yeah, I think that the last 2 years have had a profound effect on services that we've had to provide, both because of the impact of COVID and because of the rollout of both the COVID vaccination program and the extension of the flu vaccination program. You know, we've been working very hard to collect the information about the vaccine effectiveness of both the COVID vaccine and the extension of the flu vaccine. And we're continuing that work to be able to calculate the effectiveness and also the cost effectiveness of these programs. The one thing I think is important is that over the last 2 years, we've seen a sort of willingness of the population to have vaccines. And actually the sort of broader knowledge around the benefits of vaccination. How this then continues is something that we would need to explore, but also how this interacts with any changes of behaviour that we've seen over the last 2 years will also be important in our calculations of the effectiveness of these programmes, because it could be that many of the sort of, I say, non-pharmacological interventions, such as social distancing and mask wearing, that we've all been used to over the last 2 years, has actually, you know, had a more profound effect, or actually can complement in some ways the vaccination programs that we've rolled out over the last 2 years. We won't know that until, we examine the data that we've got over the last 2 years to a little bit more fuller extent, and we collect information about how our behaviours have changed over these last few years.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because vaccines have sort of been in the forefront of people's minds in a way, you know, in a way never before. And it'll be really interesting to see how that changes and how the population changes as the pandemic recedes. So I think that's all we've got time for today. So huge thanks to Dr. Wei Huang for joining us. It's really interesting to talk about some of these slightly more long-term issues about the flu vaccination when we're not kind of in the middle of the cut and thrust of actually getting vaccinations into people's arms. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please listen to some of the others, which cover different aspects about flu and flu vaccination, as well as other clinical topics. Thank you and goodbye.